Today's What Do You Think program is brought to you by your local Huron County Farm Bureau agents, Bill Weitzel in Pigeon, Corey Vollmer and Deb McBride in Elkton, Casey Yon in Harbor Beach or Ubley, Deb Croswick in Unionville, and Tim Fritz in Bad Axe. Farm Bureau Insurance, Michigan's insurance company.
Good morning. We have a number of guests in the studio from a number of school districts around Huron County. We're going to be talking about some of the changes and reforms coming in education. As Bob Dylan saying, times they are a-changing, and looks like plenty of them are on the way. We have with us today Bob Smith from Lakers. We have Joe Murphy from the ISD, Don Shelkey from Bad Axe, Martin Prout from North Huron. And I'd like to thank you all for taking time today. It's kind of the holiday season, and I don't know how busy that is around the schools, but I appreciate you taking the time and coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Things are changing in education. We hear stories coming down from the wire service and such about things that are happening. The latest one just the last day or so is that the governor is saying you're at least not going to get a cut next year. I didn't hear any promises about regaining some of what you lost, but at least they're not talking about cuts. How does that fare for schools in the area? Is that good news, or do you wish you'd get some of that back?
Well, I believe that the cuts that were made last year in most of the districts, based on what happened when the administration and legislature came in, we've adjusted to that. Some of us have made huge cuts. For instance, in Bad Axe, we literally closed two buildings. We actually moved one building off campus and got rid of it, our old office building. We closed an elementary building. We reduced staff. We took $1 million, 10% out of our budget, and made the adjustments down. To hear that it's going to be flat for next year is not really good news to me, because there's going to be other things that are going to go up. Who knows what the cost of fuel is going to be, the cost of a new bus, cost of health care, the cost of retirement. So it's good news, yeah, that we're not going to cut anymore, but we took a big hit last year, and to not get anything back this year is not going to be a real helpful. But I know that some of the programs that we cooperate with in the county, we're becoming more efficient, and that's probably good, too.
You think that was part of the intent, was to try and see what fat districts could trim?
You know what, the creativity part of this for all of us has been, you know, necessity is always the mother of invention, so I believe statewide, I think Martin had a very good point to say many times in education, we're kind of in that 25-year-ago experience, whether we're parents or educators, and with many of the technological advances, this is going to help us to get to better ways to relate to the students of the present and the future. So some of these changes are going to be useful.
If I could add, and I apologize for my cynicism regarding the governor's response, because I often lowered my expectations when I hear things come out of Lansing, and that's not being disrespectful. It's the fact that the devil's always in the detail. I'm budgeting a $200 per student loss, which I am pretty confident is going to happen, but yet you're going to hear headlines say that schools aren't going to be cut. There was some one-time $100 per student initiatives that were put in this year that are not going to be in, which we counted on. And we rose to those standards, and those were best practices, and the other one was to offset high raising retirement issues. So therefore, those two are not supposedly in the current plans, so therefore it is a decrease. Flat's a decrease. But with that said, I think the laser focus on improving efficiencies and focusing on academics is the intent, and I don't think it's entirely a bad thing. As Bob had stated, we all have a tendency to timestamp our education based on when we went to school. And so when you're managing human behavior and trying to put apples to apples, and so our struggles are not, I don't think some of the initiatives are bad. I don't think any of the member on this table, I think the accountability for each child is incredibly important, and I strongly support it because every kid counts. But what I think we struggle with is how do we communicate that with our communities and parents, because schools are being used as a new score comes out, a cut score, then now the terms you're going to be seeing in the next couple of months is the new cut scores, the new MEEP scores, and then trying to compare them to last year, and they've almost doubled. Have no problem. I think anybody in there on this table would say, set the bar, we'll go meet it, and we'll go past it. But how that data is going to be used during political, you know, climates, we're not sure. And then, and one other thing, the governor came out last night and said, along with that statement, 2012-2013, we're going to tie funding to academic achievement. That sounds like it's a wonderful headline, but what does that mean? What is the detail? Is that a growth issue, or is that everybody has to hit this score? Or it makes you a little bit nervous, and it's difficult to plan. What I am excited about, though, is the fact that we are going to get clarity this year, supposedly in February, that we will actually know what the game is, we'll know what the targets are, and then we can move to that end. Historically, we've had to wait, we've had been on your show before, we've waited as late as June and August to know what the status of funding is, what the status of anything is. So, from that end, for our governor to come out this quick, I think it's outstanding that we at least have an idea of where we're going. But again, I'm a little skeptical of the detail, because I am planning for a reduction.
You folks have had the funding pulled out from under you halfway through the year, too. They've come out and said, we aren't getting as much coming in, you're not getting as much because we're not sending it out. So it's happened to you before.
Well, I'm sure I'm not unique for anyone here, including Mr. Murphy from the ISD out of Lakers. I think this is my fifth year, and we're getting close to having cut our budget $3 to $4 million since I've been there, out of $10 million. So each year it's a little, but the total impact gets significant as the costs go up on one side and your revenue decreases on the other.
Which, if it's in turn, has forced us, as was indicated earlier, is a lot of cooperation, mm-hmm. and a lot of discussion and of how can we share resources? How can we not duplicate efforts? We're North Huron and other school districts, and not popular because we're used to, as I say, time stamping. We all rode the yellow bus, but out of these necessities, we're using Thumb Area Transit, who's done an outstanding job for half of our student transport, and it's worked out well. And if you look at it, take the emotion out of it, it makes sense. We're not taxing our community twice for using busing, and they actually are professionals. And it's everything has its problems. I'm not going to sit here and say that, everything's perfect. My yellow school bus has issues. Anytime you're transporting students, there's always going to be an issue. The sharing of an athletic director that we are going to be doing January 1st with BADX. They're sharing in other districts and resources. There is duplication effort, and if we can do it more effectively as a team and put our money right directly into the classroom on the student's desk, then that's what we should be doing. The struggle I've had is that we've got holes that we have to fill at our school district on the academic side. I need to hire some areas in the secondary to meet some of the upcoming college readiness standards, but we've kind of been in a holding pattern because of the volatility of Lansing. And at the same time, they'll turn around and say, well, you're not meeting the standards. Well, if you don't know if you have the money, you don't know if you can hire that teacher. So it's kind of a catch-22. So you find yourself almost playing the odds all the time. Do I take a risk and hire this person and hope that they don't cut my funding or then lay them off in a year?
And still have to pay them because they're laid off.
Correct.
But I will say, I think when you see the January Revenue Conference, you're going to see that the school aid fund is in pretty solid shape at this point. And I know that they say that we've improved our efficiencies, but I think it's time to take a good look at, especially that $200 that's not being mentioned that Martin referred to, that some of that money is put back into schools. There are some hiring needs that every school has, and I think it is, I'll be the one to say it, that I'm not sure that's the way it's going to happen, but I think at least that $200 should be back in there.
Well,
for next
year. I'll stand shoulder to shoulder. I don't think it's going to happen.
No, but I think it needs to.
I think, I think that over the last 2 years, we've actually become a K-14 public education. I think those dollars are going to continue to funnel to the community colleges and higher education. And, not popular because, but I also believe that I'm one of these people that you have to continue to look out. I'm not sure that's a bad thing. If you look back in the 60s and 70s, early 70s, community colleges were part of the county seat school district in many counties in the state where they, like for a community college, would be part of a large school district. I'm not suggesting that is what's happening, but I'm suggesting more of the funding that happened last year, roughly $200-$300 million went to community colleges, or not just community colleges, but higher education, university level from Proposal A. Let's not forget that we were $900 million to the good in the school aid fund last year, and that money did not come to, we actually received a cut. They're anticipating half of $1 billion right now that the school aid fund is going to be in good shape, and our governor's saying we're probably going to stay flat or make it competitive. And I think that to that end is what you're talking about.
Absolutely.
I think that there's a hybrid situation in here somewhere because I do believe we have youngsters on that other side of that, that we have in our schools are ready to take off. I mean, just the kids learn so much faster. They're in 10th grade. They can handle college courses.
And
so,
you folks have been doing
and
it.
And we are doing that.
And it's a lot through the ISD as well, that they can get some college credit beforehand. It's all kind of blurring the line here again, as you said.
And I would like to see that funding, the discussion, instead of just pushing it to the secondary, if we're going to be more responsible for more dual enrollment or any place, any time education, which I agree with, then the dollars need to come with it, not just fly out the door, but make them competitive with the school districts or allowable to the school districts. If we're going to pay more community colleges for dual enrollment, then don't give the money away necessarily. Put it in some kind of a secondary escrow account for those type of students that want to go.
Absolutely. Because we're also on top of the fact that the community colleges are getting part of the school aid fund. We're paying tuition.
We're
double dipping. From our per pupil amount, we also pay Delta College for that tuition. So there's some inherent unfairness in that, as Martin said.
It's a structural flaw.
It's a structural flaw, absolutely.
And one of the other things, even with the funding yet, that's going to make a decline, and sometimes we forget about, but the declining enrollment, because our funding is tied to our enrollment. And in the county, probably in Bad Axe would be a good example for the whole county. But we have to plan on 5% declining enrollment every year. And that's what the last 6 or 8 years have been in Bad Axe. And then you take the $6,849 and multiply that by another 30 students next year, and all of a sudden we got a teacher and a half that we probably can't afford next year. And so it's not just
buildings that are still going to be needing the same amount of heat and costing more, and all of the other things, those costs that you just can't do anything about.
Well, some of the nice things, and Joe could probably address that on the road with some of the things that are being done with common software packages, possibly some of the fiber optics that exist, but in a lot of ways education, as we looked at it, is just going to have to be different.
Well, you mentioned technology in Verlin. I think that a further look into the county software, we're all going to be on the same software system. That's going to provide a lot of opportunities for our students, our parents, and for educators. But our communities, and we see it in our kids, it just happens, it evolves. We will be putting significant amount of resources in learning through via technology. That is, the it's not an option to say, oh, we're not going to do that, or, you know, I just don't understand. You're going to see us more online. It's going to be required for that type of learner, virtual type situations. You're going to see more students doing homework remotely through websites and things like that. That is just, we're an information retrieval gathering society, and we have to get on board with that. So you're going to see schools trying to tool up quickly to meet that end.
It's inherent in rural, too, because I've seen great teachers in North Huron, Bad Axe, at the ISD and Lakers. The challenge gets to be in a rural district, an unfair amount of our tax dollars out of this current state funding go to city schools disproportionately, so you're a little bit underfunded to begin with. And then, on top of that, we're asking one or two people in a school here to be the entire department and teach to different levels with five or six different classes. It's actually impossible unless we use technology to help address the specific needs of children, so that technology is going to be the thing that not only makes us equal but better, because I think of the quality of the teachers and the community. That's going to be the next thing that is going to give us the great leap forward.
Is, you know, everybody's working for technology, and, you know, a lot of kids do stuff online, and don't get me wrong, they know how to use it. Does it take a little of the teaching experience, the school experience, out of it? Do you have to worry that you're getting a program that's, you know, going to be effective, that, you know, gives the kid everything they can get in the classroom?
I think for me, it's sometimes buying that technology. I feel like you're at a car lot. You don't know which. I mean, there's so many options and directions to go, and you have limited resources. So it's the biggest purchase you're going to make. You don't want to make a mistake. Then it becomes so limited or one-dimensional or a toy, and that's your concern. I think that the human factor, the intangible of that teacher, that nurturer, that motivator, technology can't replace that. I mean, that will never happen. And that's what people, I think, don't seem to get sometimes.
A lot of people growing up have a teacher they remember that inspired them, that, you know, was there and, you know, gave them the extra boost. you just aren't going to get that on the web.
You're not going to get that on the web, but we have to adapt. We just can't close our eyes and say, you know, teachers, no technology. You know, we're not. It's got to be a mixture. But we have a lot of teachers. We have great teachers in Huron County. We have great and resilient children. And sometimes being an elementary guy, I feel very frustrated that we're Horton Hears a Who, that story where we're not being heard. I would challenge any county to match up the cooperation and the cutting-edge stuff that is happening here in county, but yet it seems like we always are on the edge ahead and defend ourselves from consolidation. Or we're small, so we're insignificant. Or some of the best practices money that all of us qualified for, most of us were already doing, but never got. So it wasn't like a novel idea. It's like we didn't have to go do a whole lot because we were already doing those things to get the money. But it's like I wish that we could somehow. We shouldn't have to market ourselves. You know, somebody should be paying attention somewhere that says, hey, it's pretty good. And you know what? We may not be the shining Oakland County, and I'm not picking on. They just have a lot going on in Oakland County, a lot of industry, a lot of affluency. But the kids sure do well here, and they go off and do phenomenal things after schools.
Sure. And the technology, even though, just to answer your question a little bit, the way I see it, Craig, is that we're not going to have 60 students with one teacher because of technology. That technology that's going to be in the classroom is going to be used to individualize instruction for the student and their different learning styles. And so we're not going to change our student-teacher ratio, but the technology is going to be there, just like almost like a one-room schoolhouse. And we're almost evolving back to that so that that student can be individualized, instructed to his or her needs and to his or her learning styles. And the teacher will use technology back to, you know, the software that can. And maybe that child is a half year behind in reading at the third grade level. And so the technology can individualize that instruction for maybe a half hour a day and a half hour a day through a 6-week period to possibly bring that child up to grade level. At the same token, that technology could be used for a second grade student that's reading at a fourth grade level. Well, why is that second grade student being held back? So you use technology, two or three 20-minute periods in a day, and it takes that student up to the sixth or seventh grade, and maybe when that student's in sixth grade, that student's taking algebra. And we need to adjust, and we are starting to be flexible.
On something, though, mm-hmm. that I know that we have spoken, because we meet as a group often, and the state of Michigan has focused so much over the last, when I got into this business quite a few years ago, there was a gifted and talented. We focused it on, you know, abilities, and we focused on how each kid learns and excel those students. And that's going to be, I think, the mantra you're going to see the state now move to under this current regime of leadership at the legislature and the governor. But I will tell you that you will see a massive, aggressive push coming out of North Huron and other schools that we are going to start focusing on the students that aren't sitting there, that are sitting there that don't have necessarily... They score really well, but we focus so much on the student who has high needs. We haven't focused on the student who comes and does their job and push them maybe to an anxiety level. Through our testing, we're finding that we have students that are just blowing us away, and then we're looking at we don't have programs to meet them. So we're going to see structure change where you may see a second grader in a fourth grade classroom doing math. It just has to, because we need to give these kids every opportunity to go as far and as fast as they want to. And
I think you guys had great points. I think one, just to reflect, a lot of studies will say that only 30% of the students do well online without the assistance of teachers. So I think that'll always exist. And I think all of us have talked about that with the ISD. It's saying every school and district in Huron County needs to look at being a K-14 program where people can leave with either a couple years of college credit, maybe internships at whether it's Gemini, Blue Diamond, so that some of our, we have tool makers in town that say they can't hire people with the requisite skills, and those are things that maybe when we all work and put our heads together, we can meet. So I'm confident that we're, as Martin said, that we're, and Don, we're all, and Joe, we're all talking about how we can best meet some of these issues and keep people here and also make them world-class students that can perform well in any state in the country as well.
I would agree with that. I don't think online learning is for everybody, but I think we need to meet the needs of all students, and it can take some students to places that we haven't been able to take them before. And I think what you'll also find if you look around our county is there's, you know, that option's available to students right now. You know, Michigan Virtual High School, there's quite a few students around our county that are already taking those classes.
Do they take these classes in school?
Yes.
I mean, people get the idea, it's internet-based, they're going to be sitting at home at their computer. How do we know what they're doing? They're in school, we know what they're doing.
All of us, I believe, have a oversight person that works with these students. Sure. And actually, virtual requires that you can't have somebody just go sit in a corner. There has to be some guidance and oversight for those students.
One of the other things we've been talking about, I guess, Don, I'll pass it off to you really quickly, was just as we've sat down to say maybe one of the things we're finding out is that students like college courses but don't like leaving their high school experience. So as a group, we're talking more and more about how to get online college experiences during the high school day.
Yep. And another fantastic use of technology that is occurring in Huron County and in BADX now, there's the alternative ed programs now BADX and called Ascent is the program. We have right now there's 46 students, I believe was the latest count that I saw anyway, in that program. We expect it to grow to 60. And it is a true alternative program. For whatever reason, a student got behind, whatever it may be, and we started out and teamed with Lakers and got the thing going, and we thought we were going to have 15 or 20 students. Well, again, we're up to 45, and we are budgeting and planning for 60. And without the technology, we would not be able to have the high school offerings. We could not get a biology teacher. We couldn't get a chemistry teacher and an algebra teacher and an English teacher and a world history teacher. We're able to run the program through technology and get them the curriculum basically with two certified teachers and two paraprobs. And that'd be impossible without technology. First of all, we wouldn't be certified to do it.
So if people don't get the wrong impression, this isn't 60 BADX students. They come as far as Tuscola County.
Absolutely.
These are several county students who opportunities are coming to BADX for this opportunity.
Yeah, I think that almost every district in the county has at least one student in it. And
these are kids that would be struggling at their normal grade level that would frustrate them, and the learning experience, they would just kind of say enough with it, where you're trying to get them back into the system, caught up, and to where they want to learn again, you're trying to.
Exactly. And
get a diploma.
Yep, and get a diploma. And the diploma may come, they may finish out, hit the alternative program at Ascent, or they may get caught up and then go back to North Huron and get a North Huron diploma or Lakers or BADX or wherever. And there's a huge need for it. And again, without the technology, we wouldn't have been able to meet it.
Right.
We just wouldn't have been able to. And we would have these students falling by the wayside. They'd be dropping.
One of the other parts that Martin and I think Don is getting into some of those, and I know some of Joe's folks also help us with that support. We as a Northwest evaluation assessment that can assess where students currently perform, it will design activities individually for how to catch students up, and some of us are beginning to even look at Compass, which will design learning activities. So technology is not replacing a teacher, but it's a tool, I think, as a county, applaud a lot of our districts that we're all working together to use very well.
And Lakers brought the Northwest to the county testing program, and we have it, and I think there's several of the other districts there, and I believe Harbor Beach has it, and I think there's a few other districts get on board. It gives us opportunity to bench. Our kids we test them three times a year, and it benchmarks you not only state, but it benchmarks you nationally. So we can see what that eight-year-old is. They can see what they're doing not only with eight-year-olds across the state, but eight-year-olds across the country, which is pretty exciting. So we're moving to the next level, and they're self-monitoring. They want to know what their score is. That's what's exciting. So then you have the student who's taking ownership. How did I do? Did I improve? Where am I at?
We're going to have to pause and take 60 seconds, and we'll be right back more with our guests talking about the changes coming in school.
When you're looking for something important to your health and well-being like Blue Cross Blue Shield health insurance for yourself or your employees, are you willing to put your trust into someone on the other end of an 800 phone number? Or what about that click of a mouse? Are you willing to trust these people that you don't even know? Here's a much better idea. Contact one of your Huron County Farm Bureau insurance agents. They grew up in your neighborhood, you share the same zip codes, they probably even know your family. These are the people you should put your trust in. When you're insured through one of your Huron County Farm Bureau insurance agents, you can rest easy knowing that they'll be there today, tomorrow, and always to answer questions and make adjustments as families grow and your needs change. Farm Bureau Insurance, Michigan's insurance company.
Contact one of your local Huron County Farm Bureau agents.
Heights, Bill Weitzel in Pigeon, Corey Vollmer or Deb McBride in Elkton, Deb Croswick in Unionville, Casey Yan in Harbor Beach or Obley, or Tim Fritz in Bad Axe.
And time now to check in with your weather forecast. Our barometer right now holding steady at 28.71 inches. Winds blowing from the northeast, 0 to 1 mile per hour. Also, humidity at 100%. Still have those foggy conditions, so please use some caution when you're driving out there. Current temperature 37 degrees so far. That has been our high today. Still a cluster of clouds coming northeast from the Illinois and Wisconsin area as we have a strong chance of precipitation coming our way right now. Some of those clouds going through Lansing, Kalamazoo, Grand Rapids, Ann Arbor, and Detroit. And so some of those clouds from Wisconsin and Illinois as they travel eastward could be hitting the Thumb area. We'll keep an eye on that. Let's check in with the rest of our weather conditions. It is brought to you by Pigeon Telephone. Brought to you with warm holiday wishes by your friends at Pigeon Telephone Company, Main Street Cafe and Bakery, Agra Valley Services, AVCI.net, all located in Pigeon.
Good morning. Low pressure cutting to our south will keep things unsettled today with some off and on shower activity and above normal temperatures for mid-December. Drier air will build in tonight, but another frontal boundary will settle southward across the area tomorrow, kicking up a few snow showers as it does so. High pressure starts to build back into the area on Friday, leaving us with partly sunny skies and near seasonable temperatures. Early fog, otherwise cloudy with a few showers today, highs 38 to 43, variable winds at 5 to 10. There's a 90% chance of precipitation. Evening showers, then partly cloudy skies tonight, 27 to 32. Westerly winds at 5 to 15, chance of precipitation 40%. Skies turn cloudy with developing snow showers late tomorrow, 35 to 40. Northwesterly winds at 5 to 15 with a 40% chance of precipitation. Partly sunny on Friday, 27 to 32. From WLEW Precision Weather Service, this is meteorologist Russ Murley.
Time's gone by. Christmas passed. Remember the gifts of Christmas? The oranges you received as a child? Your first doll? That sled that made winter so exciting? The flannel pajamas lovingly made by Grandma? And that electric train that Santa brought? Reflect in the special sights of Christmas. The twinkling lights and glowing candles, shiny glass ornaments and silvery tinsel. The tree lit magically in a darkened room. Then there are the sounds of Christmas. Sleigh bells, carolers, the grandchildren's voices over the telephone. During this festive season, Pigeon Telephone Company, part of the advanced telecommunication system of the new millennium, brings the warmth of the holiday connections to friends and family, home to you. Season's greetings from Pigeon Telephone Company, the hometown telephone company in Michigan's Thumb.
You're listening to WLEW. We now return to What Do You Think with Craig Routsman in local area here on County School Superintendents.
We're back, and again, our guests are from the North Huron Schools. We have Martin Kraut. We have Don Shelkey from the Bad Axe Schools, Joe Murphy from the Huron Intermediate School District, Bob Smith from Lakers. We've been talking about all the changes coming down for schools. I don't know how you guys even keep track of it, but we were talking a little bit, and you wanted to go into some of the aspects about the NEEP score changes that are going to be coming down the pike, that they're going to raise the level, but it's going to mean that when you look at last year's scores, it's not going to be apples to apples anymore.
Well, essentially what happened is the state weren't holding our kids to a high enough standard. In other words, we want to be able to compare it to a national standard, so they set the standard where you had to get so many right to be proficient. They raised that considerably. So when you see the scores this year, the scores are going to look lower. But essentially, it's the same students. And I guess I'm not phrasing that very well, but the scores are going to look much lower this year. But I guess what we want to assure you is that students are still learning, and we need to focus more on just on MEEP scores, but how much our students have the growth they've shown, that type of thing.
It's kind of hard to get away from the MEEP scores, though, because, they're going to be basing what you get on how well your kids are doing. And then they've kind of pulled the rug out from under you in the first year of that.
Well, I think if you look at it, they'll compare them to state average for one thing. And the other thing is, I think when they produce them, they'll also produce your previous 3 years' scores, and they'll average those. So if you look at the score in comparison to the past 3 years, I think you'll be able to get a clearer picture.
There is one of the things that happens, you know, when there's reform, and in actually we've been in reformation for Michigan schools now about 10 years. So I kind of wonder, you know, when we'll stop reforming and actually become something. So we have that target. But that, if you look at each legislation that comes through, and yeah, we do need to be tweaked. There obviously were some issues in our system. It wasn't meeting the structure, wasn't meeting the times. But I want to caution folks, don't get too excited about these particular scores, mm-hmm. because in less than 2 years, there's going to be a brand new test in the state of Michigan that is going to compare us nationally. And we're excited about it because then it will be apples for apples with schools across the country. It will be a smart, balanced assessment. It'll be done much like our students are doing with the Northwest Educational Testing Program we're doing, where students will get on the computer and take testing. Not one test, but they will do it over the course of the year to show that they're learning, to show that, you know, you said you were teaching fractions. What's the percentage of students in your school that can do fractions in October, in January, and in the spring? Those are more tangible results that we can tell parents. A grade is subjective, but we can actually give you a score that says that is standards-based. This is what your child can do versus what does that A really mean? So, and the same thing with MEEP scores.
Didn't we kind of have this years ago? I mean, everybody where I was at, we all took the Iowa tests. And it was everybody across the nation seemed to take the Iowa tests, and you had one standard to compare. And then Michigan came up with the MEEP scores.
Correct.
They wanted a test, made their own test, and made it, some people say, just saying what I hear from people, mm-hmm. that they made it intentionally easy so some of the troubled schools, the bigger schools in the metro areas, could pass. Whether I'm hitting that right or not.
I think you're hitting it right on. I think we do a lot of things for self-justification. And, you know, we got to be honest with folks. It's not perception is reality more. Reality is reality. Can we compete with other states? Can we compete with what we say we're doing? And I think we are doing that and excited. But I guess here we're going to have a year or two of saying schools are performing horribly. And then we're excited because when they put in a true achievement test and the smart balance assessment coming in the next couple of years, I anticipate our scores to just climb because you're being tested on what actually students are learning. Curriculum. Keep in mind, the state of Michigan joined as the 48th state to get on with the Common Core standards. So we're at Michigan's in the tail end, and we're excited about it, but there's going to be commonality in at least the expectations, the basic block and tackle for teaching and learning in this state compared to what it is in Maine or Washington State. So,
but does it take a little bit away from your local school district teaching what the people around you feel is important when you're teaching towards a test?
You know what, the hard issue is if we're at national norms, we would want every one of our students to do well, whether it's here in the West Coast or the East Coast. So again, kind of like Martin said, when it becomes a nationalized standard test, you have to look at some of them, but it can be. I certainly did I graded statewide tests when I was in Georgia, and at first wondering if it was fair, and really when I was done, I was convinced probably a high school graduate should exhibit the skills that were there. The other part of it that Martin mentioned earlier, that's also, I think, we're facing now when we look at this huge decrease that isn't really fair. If you put parentheses around that, if we do have the same students that were assessed last spring, they've had a summer off and come in, and suddenly the bar is raised to this standard, it's not really incrementally based, so it's not really realistic. I'm a pretty big guy. I can probably, you know, tip out a basketball at 7 foot. If they tell me next fall my new goal is 10 foot, probably not going to happen.
Well, I'm glad that you brought that up regarding the issue of if we're teaching to test and we're doing it, shame on us. First of all, those standards that are based are not based on legislatures. They're based on real research. They're based on national science, math standards, people who are really looking at international standards. So we've gotten on board, looked across how the United States is performing against other countries and tried to implement what are the things that students have to know. Now, keep that in mind. That's a minimum standard. If you're just going to go to the minimum and say, oh, I meet the Common Core, I'm happy, again, shame on you, then you're being best of average. You should be taking those minimal standards and taking them as far and as deep as you can. And I think that's what we're talking about here. The current MEEP test is not reflective. it is the earlier statement you made. It is testing what the state wants you to learn. Is, are you teaching what we want you to learn? The Common Core standards are based on much broader, deeper educational standards. And so I just feel bad for community students and parents, because this will be like the fourth major reformation that I've seen in a very short period of time. Not too long ago, you may remember, guys, that there was an endorsed diploma in our state. That's gone away. And in 2 years, I truly believe there's going to be another overhaul, because that testing is going to measure different items and different results. Therefore, employers are going to want one thing. If you graduate from Northern Schools, that diploma better mean that they can do decimals. They can read. And that's, to me, it's a credibility. So we're excited about the future, because it will add the credibility to the diploma.
Do you feel you're going to get maybe a parental backlash in some of this? I mean, parents are very aware that, you know, this high school record's going to follow my kid, and, you know, and all of a sudden in 2012, his scores took a great big dip. Is there going to be a notation that, you know, they changed the standards, or is there going to be, you know what I mean? Because
sure.
Parents are very aware, you know. I'm sure you get it when you have disciplinary problems or something. You're going to ruin my kid for life.
I can only put it with a story. I was in a previous district. We had one of our valedictorians score a 32 on the ACT, which is an extremely high score, and failed the very first year of the Michigan Merit MME exam. How does that work? And went on to go to U of M, become a dentist, did the grad school there, and now is practicing. Those are real results. That test, that was the year of, again, I mentioned earlier, endorsed diplomas. Now they don't do that anymore. So we want some stability, I guess, is what we're looking for. And we believe that the Common Core and the Smart Balance of testing will give us stability. So it will no longer be, we're changing the cut scores, we're changing the tests, we're doing this. It'll be a common practice. So there will be a security in that.
I'm probably the one that's old enough, I can probably say if Lansing runs me out, that probably one of the difficult things has been in the last few years to say that everyone needs a rigorous secondary curriculum. As Martin mentioned, some of the earlier initiatives, when we were kind of saying that some people are on career pathways and some are on college, so that we're working to all students' talents. At some day when we kind of say, well, you know, that European model made pretty good sense, that everyone gets the same education up to eighth grade, and then we sort of track people to their future skills to make it relevant, that's somewhere got to be in there too. Because otherwise, the other relevant point you make is, if we keep shifting with all the expense that we do, there are human results out of underfunding, out of constant changes that our young people may have to write the check for.
Yep. And we talked about it a little bit earlier, Bob alluded to it earlier, but there is that loss of the technical skills that were taught back when I was a youngster in high school, where we had shop classes and we had mechanical drawing and architectural drawing, and some people went in that track or wherever it may be. They grew up on farms and were ready to walk into, at that time, active industries and take over a job and maybe become a plumber or a journeyman as a electrician or a die maker. And we're hearing from industry, and Joe can probably speak to it better than I can, we're hearing from local industry, as Bob alluded to earlier, that we have students coming out of our high schools, and they walk in and are going to have a job in industry, in one of our local industries, and they literally don't know the difference between a hammer and a screwdriver, because they haven't had those skills either at home, because we're not an agricultural community so much as family farms where they grew up, and as soon as they're old enough, they're driving a tractor and doing those things. We don't have that anymore, so our children are coming out because of the, again, college ready, everybody's going to go to U of M or State. Not going to happen.
Right.
It's not going to happen. We need to prepare students for not only college, those who have those aptitudes and those the will and desire to do it, but we need to provide the community and industry with students that can walk in, grab a hold of a wrench, and fix something. And I know, Joe, you've been in more touch with them, with industry than I have.
Well, and I'll just touch on that at our Heron Area Technical Center. You know, we have a lot of great programs that do many of those things, but just one example, in our engineering program, we've been working with the Gemini Group, and there's actually an engineer from the Gemini Group that comes right into our engineering program to provide training in metal machining. They provided some equipment and working with some specific students, and that's a specific need, working with local business for jobs that will be available for these students, and we're looking at more opportunities to do similar things.
I'm hoping we can find, I always hear that from Blue Diamond, the same thing, that they'd love to hire folks at, you know, substantial wages to do tool and die, but, you know, we don't have that connection. So we're all working on these things and say, how do we fill needs and say that.
You're working on that. However, it hasn't, vocational funding at the state level has disappeared at the local schools. And so, you know, nationally, there's this huge shortage for skilled workers, you know, people going into the trades. You know, maybe we're not having upstart new homes everywhere, but there's still a need for electricians and plumbers. And as that vocational dollars left K-12 education, so did the programs. Some of us still have shop programs in that, but they're very finite in how, what they can offer. So that's, again, we're trying to partner and expand, but I would really, I personally think within a few years you can see the big push of vocational education come back.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to all have to re-gear up for that. It'll have a technology swing to it, but it is going to come back. There has to be a balance. You can't have one. Granholm started, Governor Granholm started several years when she or her thing was every kid's going to have to go to college. Not realistic. And this, we need to have a balance. Everything's a balance. And so, you know, I'm agreeing with all these guys, we have to be creative. We need to listen to what our communities are saying they need. And if we have local people who can't employ local people, that's, businesses can't employ local people, that's a problem.
Well, and there's always a push to, you know, we don't want our kids to go halfway across the state to find a job. We'd like to have jobs here, have them trained for jobs that are here, that can give them a good living and a good life.
Mm-hmm.
I know we can't answer everything in the time allotted. We're coming down to the end of our time here. Is there any last statements you want people to know? Is there information out there on the changes that are coming? And
you can go to the state website, Pure Michigan. It will give you the Governor Snyder's proposals. Those will be out there. I think they're important. If you agree or disagree with them, I think being educated and advised is important before you develop an opinion. And I think the only thing that I want to say to this end, I'm concerned about our teaching staff within itself. There's only so much you can ask them to cut or take away or lay off. And I think that they have personalized a lot of these reforms. And I think if we can say anything to our listeners, you know, smile, say hello to a teacher. They truly have felt the burden and the pressure of all of these things that are coming down the pike. And, you know, sometimes things are out of our reach. A student not coming to school, tragedies in their home, you know, they take all of these things and internalize them and make it personal. And, you know, I have a wonderful staff I work with, but I can see the stress in their eyes. And it's... realize that we're with them and supporting them in these changes. And changes do have to happen. And that's my two cents.
And just a touch to add on to that, I would encourage parents to get out and be participants in your school, because I think we have great schools across our county with great teachers in those schools. And there's great things happening, great programs in every one of those schools. And, you know, sometimes we focus on something like a MEEP score, and I just want to encourage them that there's great things happening. Get out and participate and see what's going on in our schools.
And I just my last comment would be regarding the new MEEP score is going to come out here in a month or 6 weeks when they hit the public. And history repeats itself. Every time a test was changed, the scores went down. We'll get there. Martin's alluded to it many times. We'll get to where we are. But the thing that will happen, even when you see them now, is I believe that the thumb area schools, Huron County especially, but Tuscola and San Lac County, where I've worked in all three of the counties now, our scores will be, on the average, above state average. It's just the type of education that goes on in the thumb.
Martin said I couldn't be political, so I won't be political. But
is that political?
No. But certainly at this time, and I think they've summed it up, is that we all love children, everybody at this table. I get reminded daily that that's what motivates them, as Martin mentioned, with staff and community at large. And we have to remember when some of these changes come to realize the one thing that we all have in common is a love of children, and hopefully we can use those things to unite us rather than to unfairly put the burden on one or another. When we were in the U.S., one of the studies we did in one of the school districts, we found that 80 percent of our children came from pretty stable homes and support and school support, and for everyone to succeed, the more of those things that we can do, the better off we'll all be.
Thanks for being with us, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Our guests today on the program have been Bob Smith from the Lakers Schools, Joe Murphy from the Huron ISD, Don Schelke from Bad Axe, and Martin Proud from the North Huron Schools. If you want you to stay tuned, coming up at the top of the hour, we'll clue you in on all the latest in the news.
Today's What Do You Think program was brought to you by your local Huron County Farm Bureau agents, Bill Weitzel in Pigeon, Corey Vollmer and Deb McBride in Elkton, Casey Yon in Harbor Beach or Ubley, Deb Croswick in Unionville, and Tim Fritz in Bad Axe. Farm Bureau Insurance, Michigan's insurance company.
If you're a farmer, you should know Farm Bureau Insurance. After all, you know how tricky insurance can be. Did you remember to add that new planter you bought? What about the truck? Did you switch that over? The equipment you'll be using will need to be added. If you're a farmer, you should know Farm Bureau Insurance, because Farm Bureau Insurance works with you to get all your needs taken care of. From the implements and trucks to the insurance on your workers, your local Huron County Farm Bureau agent will walk with you every step of the way. If you're a farmer and you don't know Farm Bureau Insurance, call one of your local Huron County Farm Bureau agents today. It could just be one of the most important calls you make. Farm Bureau Insurance, Michigan's insurance company.
Contact one of your local Huron County Farm Bureau agents, Deb McBride or Corey Vollmer in Elkton, Casey Yon in Harbor Beach or Ubley, Deb Croswick in Unionville, Tim Fritz in Bad Axe, or Bill Weitzel in Pigeon.
Michigan, my Michigan.
The Thumb's hottest country, AM 1340, with the music you want and the news and information you need.